see the microphone.
Hi, I'm Mia Bonta, and I'm here with
Barbara Kahn.
Barbara Kahn of Alameda, and we are doing StoryCorps today. I'm visiting with Sylvia today, with Barbara today, whose daughter is Sylvia, and I thought it would be great to hear Barbara's story. So, Barbara, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Far Rockaway, New York.
You're a New Yorker?
I am a New Yorker.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in Far Rockaway. You know, it smelled like Alameda, which is why I like Alameda. Of course, it was on the, you know, it's a peninsula that extends into the Atlantic Ocean from the tip of Long Island.
Yeah.
And that's where Far Rockaway is, on that peninsula. So it was between the bay and the ocean, and it had that salty sea smell. Oh. And Alameda has that same quality. And so I fell in love with Alameda because of the way it smelled.
I think it was supposed to click. We know that. Okay. And how did you leave Far Rockaway? How did you leave Far Rockaway? Where did you go after Far Rockaway?
I went many places. I went to school. Uh-huh. I went to Brooklyn College for a while. And then I went to NYU for a while. And then I ended up at Boston University for my MA. MSSS from Brio.
So what did you like better, New York or Boston?
Huh?
Where did you like to live? What was better, Far Rockaway or Boston?
Boston.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Far Rockaway is very narrow, small, really small community. And it was a summer community. People would come and rent a bungalow for the summer and spend the summer there. And the population would be, you know, grow. And then when the summer was over, all of these summer people, we call them summer people, they would leave.
They would just go
and
away.
The winter people were still there.
So you liked that vibrancy.
It was a small town.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
And it was mostly Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there were Jewish neighborhoods all over New York, but Rockaway was probably almost all white and almost all Jewish. And that was different for me. It was good for me to get out of there.
Yeah. How did you end up in Alameda?
I met my husband.
Oh, he was an Alamedan?
He was from Alameda.
He was.
Yeah. Ah. I don't want to talk about him.
We won't talk about him. But that's how you ended up in Alameda. And so how long have you been in Alameda?
60 years.
60 years.
Long time.
What? And I'll start my next question. What was Alameda like 60 years ago?
Very, very, very different. There was no South Shore. There just, you know, there was no shopping center there. The beach began, like where the lagoon is now, was like, the lagoon wasn't there. That was the beginning of the ocean. And so it was like just straight. We used to take our dog down to the beach.
Yeah.
And it was just beach. And there was the Navy here, and the Navy was a strong, really strong presence in Alameda, and it made it a conservative community in a lot of ways. It was a highly segregated community. There was no way that an African American could buy a house or rent in Alameda. I had a neighbor who loved, the vice principal of Chipman School was an African American man. And Barbara loved Billy. I said, would you rent to him? No. No.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was I had a realtor come once to the house and say the realtors deserve credit for keeping Alameda white. Our mayor was a barber. And he had a sign in his window that said, America, love it or leave it. I mean, it was a pretty conservative community.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't even basically Democrat. I think that eventually it became mostly Democratic, but it wasn't then.
What have you, I have to, every single time I press that button, I'm asking you a new question, so it kind of tags it. What have you loved about the changes that you've seen in Alameda over those 60 years?
The changes?
Yeah, changes.
The diversity in this community is astounding. It's astounding. I never thought it would happen. I live on the trajectory of the kids who go from the projects to Wood School. Mm-hmm. And there's one of everything. There's a little boy who's a Sikh who has a hair thing. Mm-hmm. There's a little girl who wears a hijab. Mm-hmm. It's so totally integrated and mixed. When I went to the the promotion ceremony for Junior Jets, their eighth grade class, it was beautiful to see because these kids all loved each other. I mean, there was a true feeling of something there.
Yeah.
And that was it's very special. And those kids carry it forward because I'm sure that Janelle sees the result of having these kids having had that experience. Mm-hmm. And kids, you know, my granddaughter ended up with a friendship group that's so different than what she started with. There are several African-American girls. There's like a Middle Eastern girl. I mean, it's just
very diverse,
totally,
yeah.
Totally different. And the kids care about each other and share with each other. It's a very different and very much better community than it was. It was stultifying before it was terrible. Mm. It really was. The first family that was able to buy in South Shore had to go to court to be allowed to buy. Mm. Because it was before, there were already fair housing laws in place, but they weren't enforced yet.
Right.
I have a picture of Sylvia riding in a backpack. She was a baby with a bumper sticker on her backpack that said, yes, on 14, because it was a fair housing thing.
So you've always been an advocate for what is in your heart.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. What did you do? What was your day job, or what were your day jobs over those 60 years?
I worked for the Jewish Community Center in Oakland. Mm-hmm. When I first came here, I came to visit a friend from college, and one of my teachers from BU was here, and he offered me a job, and I came back because I liked the weather.
Yeah,
the weather here is so, you know, so different, but it's an amazing community now. It really is, because so convenient. In 10 minutes you're in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
10 minutes you're in Berkeley, so you're not stuck in this little crack here. But it's
right.
Much more. The only place you could get anything to eat now, Amita, Ollie's and
yeah.
Jim's. That was it.
Back in the day.
You know,
so
now,
many different
now
choices.
There's some of everything.
Yeah.
It's just very change, and that's being hard for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are finding the challenge difficult.
Yeah, I think so too. Where do you think you got your sense of justice and equity?
I don't know. I mean, I'm Jewish, and it's in our tradition. Mm-hmm. My father was a longshoreman. My father was a bigoted man, really. But I don't know how it happened, but it just, like, I think somehow, it's kind of crazy to think that, but there's like a racial strain that goes through the generations, that it's, my grandson Evan had a very negative sense of being Jewish. I used to drive him back and forth to Hebrew school, and he hated it. Mm. He did it because his mother insisted, but he said he didn't believe it. He was an atheist at 10 years old, and he maintained that. It's like on an application, he would never check that he was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And then when he graduated from high school, he spent a year in Israel, and he came back with a whole different set of attitude. Still the skeptic, still a non-believer, but also recognizing that it was somehow in his tradition to care about other people.
Yeah.
It's a good tradition.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very powerful, and
you know, we don't even know what's happening to us.
Yeah. Talk to me about tradition a little bit, though. That's a hard thing to be able to in a changing world where, particularly for kids, where they're getting so much information and
so much,
you know, either religious tradition or cultural traditions. Like, how has your family been able to maintain your traditions?
Well, it's we are a mixed family.
Yeah.
Because Sylvia's husband is not Jewish, and in fact, he is comes from a I don't know what the Orthodox Christian home, really a almost an evangelical family, and he still stays. He's uncomfortable leaving that tradition, mm-hmm. but we practice differently. We eat Jewish. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, but we eat Jewish food, and it's Jewish food is Jewish food, and it's different food.
Right.
But so our diet is a Jewish. We celebrate. We have Christmas tree, but we also have a menorah, and we celebrate Hanukkah. And the children have gone to a Sunday school, and both children were bar mitzvahed.
Yeah.
At Sylvia's insistence, because Sylvia felt that it was important to have an influence other than the evangelical influence on these children, because that's very narrow. They're not going to like that.
Well, I think you get to say whatever you want at this point. What did you were you bat mitzvahs?
No.
Bat mitzvahs? You were not?
No. Mm. My parents were absolutely non-religious.
Mm.
No, nothing. And neither was my sister, because my parents were non-believers. You know, my parents were second generation American. So their parents were American born too. So they were not part of the European Jewish tradition, really. And we lived in Far Rockaway, which was Jewish, but not really. It wasn't a kosher butcher store in Far Rockaway. I mean, it wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. So it was different.
So how did you come to your religion then, if that wasn't a part of what you
I don't know.
Grew up with?
Just made sense to me. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just where it just made sense to me. As Evan said, it made sense to him. Mm-hmm. At 10 years old, it made sense to him that the stuff he was being handed at religious school was not really what made sense to him. And I feel the same. And I had, there was a thing in New York. I was very bright, and I belonged to something called ethical culture. Did you ever hear of ethical culture?
I only know of ethical culture, the school.
Oh, no.
There's a school called Ethical Culture now in New York.
The Ethical Culture Society.
Ah,
it was an organization, and there was a young people's group in it, and we used to have these very intellectual discussions, and I used to go from Far Rockaway into Manhattan every week to be in this group. And, it's like you found your way into being in a different place than you should have been.
Right.
Somehow the fates make it so that you end up in another place.
Right.
And the same thing for me. Could have ended up very differently. My sister is liberal. She's not an activist. And I have been an activist always. I've been an active Democrat. But I was one of the founding members of HOPE, which is was the Fair Housing Group in Alameda back when it first started. And because it made sense to me, and it's where my friends were, and it just happened. I just fell into it. You know, I mean, it's weird, you know, the way life takes you
that way. Let's talk about Democratic politics in Alameda.
Well, like when we had the mayor who loved it or leaves it. I think Alameda probably became Democratic maybe during when Mundell ran. That we used to there was a Democratic club in Alameda. Ash Jones was in it. It was
Hey.
That's Evan.
Hey Evan.
Beautiful.
He's beautiful, yes.
He's so nice.
He's a sweet boy.
He sat and talked to Gary for a half hour.
Oh, that's nice.
It was just a natural place for me to find a home, really, in the Democratic
Club. Democratic Club.
And there was a Democratic Club. There were several iterations of the Democratic Club. But the original Democratic Club was really a strong organization. And there were people who were committed from all over the place. I know a guy named Newt Elder. I mean, these names won't mean anything because they're long gone. But it was an active Democratic club, and it stayed together until it broke up, which Democrats have a way of doing.
Right. And still today, yes.
And it was dormant for a long time, and then somebody moved into town who was a passionate Democrat, and she got the thing reorganized. But I had trouble joining that club because they loved the old high school and wanted to save it. And I never wanted to save it. I felt that it was an old building, and that's all it was. And an architect once said that it was front door architecture.
What does that mean?
Because the front of it is, you know, architecturally interesting. You go behind inside, it and it looks like a factory.
Yeah.
And but there was a big, big, passionate conservative. And it still dominates a lot of issues in this community. I think if the community had a choice of tearing down that building or anything, they would take anything because they want to keep that building and they don't care.
Why do you think people get so attached to monuments, to buildings like that? Why is that such a...
Well, the whole island tipped towards the east. I mean, the population was on the east end. The population was very stable of all the only Alamedans. People were... It used to be if you weren't born in Alameda Hospital, you weren't an Alamedan.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a big connection to Alameda, and that building was connected to the connection. And you know, when the architect came, was talking to us, he raved about the beautiful Alameda High School building. Mm-hmm. And it's imposing from the front.
It is.
But an incidental is kind of tacky looking compared to incidental. And I asked him, you know, you're saying all these wonderful things about Alameda High School. Are you going to make incidental being equally attractive as a modern school? And he said, sure, I'm waiting to see it. We're all waiting to see.
What kind of what if I said, what are your three most important values for what guide you in your life? What would they be?
I think justice, compassion, and I think understanding of difference and respect for difference.
Talk to me a little bit about the... Oh, this is a good question. For your great-great-grandchildren listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you'd want to pass on to them? What would you want them to know?
I would want them to know that they have started out in life as good people, and that I would hope that they would continue in life caring for other people, paying attention to the needs of other people, doing what you could to support the other people in your life. And that having that kind of connection among people is the most important thing that they could have. And I hope they have it. I know they do. I see who comes. There's always a kid sleeping on this sofa. I don't know who he is, but he's sleeping here. And I like them having that. And they like it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that will be a part of what they impart and what they bring into their own parenting.
You know, and Peach is a unique little girl who's going to set the world on fire, really. And he's very contemplative and deep thinker. But every move he makes is considered. He knows. He's just committed to justice, and his experience in Israel emphasize that for him. He really is there. I would hope they continue to grow into, you know, the kind of people that they started out as, that they are able to maintain and pass it along.
You talked about Evan having this transformative experience when he went to Israel. If you were to be queen for a day of the world, what would you want every child to be able to have? What would you want every child to have?
Peace and an understanding of other people so that they would engender peace and fairness and respect for cultural differences. Just I would want every kid growing up feeling that they were privileged to be here as they are, and but that privilege contained responsibilities to be open to others who were in need. I would hope they continue to be Jewish in their attitudes.
Mm.
I mean, I just think a lot of it is just like born into us. I really think it's in our blood. It's weird.
Yeah. I think that sense of, it's really a sense of service, I think, and a yes. sense of a commitment to caring for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel that. My high school that I went to, my friend's seminary, it was it's a Quaker school, but about 40% of the students there were Jewish. So yeah. I spent a lot of time.
It would be.
While,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, because that's during the time. New York Jews who opted for that.
Yeah.
Were opting for something that fit for
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So maybe you're Jewish or Jewish.
Maybe I am. Although I took that that DNA test, and I don't think so, but it would be nice.
I've gone on a really different path than you have. I mean, you were really like in the public sector, really.
Yeah.
I mean, through Rob.
Yeah.
Through your mom.
Yeah.
Through your family. And I mean, it's also in your blood, I assume.
Yes.
Also to continue in that tradition.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to you. Just makes sense.
That's it does. All. It does
and that, make sense. That you really don't have a choice.
Yeah. So you were very active in the Democratic Club in Alameda. You've obviously done so many different things in Alameda, and then you decided to run for school board.
Yeah.
When was that? In.
Well, I was part of a group called the Brown Bags.
Yeah.
And we were a group of women, there were six of us, who were interested in education for all different places. Ann Muir had a handicapped child. Nora Murphy had a child who was physically handicapped. Alice Huey had 17 children, and she lived in the West End. And Eleanor Stoneman and Lois Hanna were committed to libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And the six of us formed a group. We would go to every school board meeting. We had a reputation. Don Sherritt, when he would see us walking in, he would say, "What are these brown bags up to now?" Because we were politically pushy. And so we, you know, and Ann's father was a congressman, so we had political connections, and we stayed with it. And then eventually, two of our group ran for the school board, Ann Muir and Lois Hanna, both minority members, suffered for 4 years. And then many years later, I mean, I don't know why I decided at the last minute that I had to run. Because I felt that the district was so controlled by the vision of Kirsten Vitale that somebody had to step up and speak about it. And I remember vividly the day that applications closed was a Thursday. Thursday morning after I dropped Sylvie at work, I decided then that I was going to pull papers. It was like I had no idea.
So it was just it was looming there for you, but it was...
I had been trying desperately to get somebody to run. I talked to, what's his name, Michael, somebody or other, on Bay Farm, people who had been interested but didn't want to put themselves out there. And so I felt like I had no choice. Somebody had to do it, so I would do it. And I had no campaign. I had no money, no nothing. Just going to do it, and I did it. Surprised me. I didn't expect to win. But, you know, I had a lot of roots in the community.
Of course,
which is why
you did.
I was well
yes.
known. And
yes.
that's what does it, being well known.
Yeah. People know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Across the island. Everybody knows who you are. How do you think what do you think people say about you versus who you really are?
I don't know.
Do you even care?
Oh, I think they care. I think there are people who really think.
No, do you care what people say about you? No, of course not.
No.
No.
No, my daughter thinks I should. My daughter is much more conciliatory. She goes after what she wants, but she does it in a nicer way. I go.
Mm-hmm. Straight at it.
Right at it.
Yeah.
And the Democratic Club is a big disappointment to me because it's turned into a Bernie Sanders club.
They've.
It is.
Kind of waned over into a very, well, just a different way of being, I guess. Tell me, I have two daughters. You know that I have a son, but yeah. I also have two daughters. And I know what our relationships are like. They're both of my daughters are very strong-willed, independent.
You want them to be that way, though. You're raising them to be that way.
Yeah. Your daughter is very strong-willed and independent. Tell me about your mother-daughter relationship.
I say that Sylvia and I get along like a cat and a dog, but we get along and we love each other.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting I say that, you know, I was raised by a strong woman. My mother worked when other mothers stayed home. My mother worked as a professional secretary. And I raised Sylvia with a sense of self that was strong. You know, and that was important to me and to her. And she's repeating it with her daughter. And so we're like carrying on that line forward.
Yeah.
Too, because that's the way it is. And that's what we do, because that's our job.
Yeah. I know it's our job, Sylvia.
It's hard. It's hard.
Barbara, I will say, though, that somewhere along the way, it gets really hard. It's hard to raise strong, independent women because, you know, they're figuring their worlds out, and often they're doing that with you as their test case.
I know it's not easy. You know, and Sylvia's husband is a calm, even going person, and when Sylvia and I get excited and mix it up, he thinks we're fighting, but we're not fighting. We're having a vigorous discussion about whatever we talk about, and it is. I mean, it's just. And I want her to be that way. And she is that way. I mean, I see her out in the world and I say, wow, I'm so proud of her. Mm. And I should be proud of her. And she should be proud of her girl. And I am proud of her girl. And it's a girl. You see, I watch Peach play basketball, watch all these little girls playing basketball. Tough, polite, pleasant, friendly, but tough.
Yeah.
And there's an opportunity now for girls to do that. There wasn't, like, I don't know whether she ever would have, but there was no such thing as a basketball team for girls when she was little.
Right.
But it's what we want our girls to be. We teach them to be that way.
Yeah.
And it's very contemporary. I mean, people don't really talk about this. They're talking more and more and more about this, about women needing to be strong. And that is what we're doing. We're trying to make her strong. And that's, it's going to be a better world. It's a better world every day because of women being strong.
Right. I agree. And...
And running for school board.
Thank you. It is. I think it's a better world because we are allowed to take the strength that we have and bring it out into many different
public
worlds.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Just make it better.
Yeah. Our domain is no longer our home. It's the world.
That's right.
And that's awesome.
And it has an impact. You know, I mean, everything we do has an impact somewhere along the line.
True.
So thank you.
Thank you.
It's exhausting.
It is.
I know.
So what? Give me a. You were working full time. You're raising your daughter. Your very strong, independent daughter. How did you manage it all? And being incredibly civically engaged. How did you keep all of the balls in the air?
Because
What was your trick?
I didn't work.
Oh.
I was home and my time was my own back then.
Uh-huh.
And that's women could and do what
helped.
They wanted to. So if I wanted to go knocking on doors, I'd just go
you
and
could
knock
do
on
that.
Doors.
Yeah.
So it was different then. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of the changing world.
Yeah.
For the better. Always for the better. I mean, because each change has been for the better.
Yeah. What change do you want to see in the world going forward? We're living in this era of Trump. What do you want from our little island or this country?
I want us to be able to have good relationships with every kind of people. I want us to have peace among many people. I want us to be a human family. I mean, I feel strongly that we have a connection to everybody, and that it's up to us to nourish that connection and build that connection. And I want to do my share. And I've been trying. I may be finished with trying. I may be done with my connections, but maybe not.
No, those connections last on forever, don't they?
I know.
They
I've got everything
do.
To see me.
Yeah, of course they do.
That's my connection.
Yes. People will come to see you. People feel connected through you. People feel connected because they know the name Barbara Kahn.
And they think, and hopefully I make them think, because they know I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
They know if I say something, it's based on some kind of understanding of the world.
Right.
And what it should be like. And the world is getting closer and closer. I mean, you just look at Alameda, and Alameda is almost a summary of how the world is getting better because of the diversity, because of, you know, when you hear about police in proper relationships with others, it doesn't feel like it's going to happen in Alameda, because somehow we have control over what happens in our community. Mm-hmm. And that's better. It's better, way better than it used to be, but it's better. And it's reflected in the leadership in the police department. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the fire department, but I assume that it's some of the same civic sense that's there. And, you know, and whatever little bit I have done to just put this idea forward is worthwhile. I think it's important, because I think if everybody did it, it would be a finished good world.
Yes.
We could stop trying, because we would be there.
Right. And Alameda would have that Far Rockaway beautiful smell that you fell in love with, and it would hold the... It would be a place of peace for all of our kids and families.
Well, it is a peaceful community.
Yeah, it is.
I think people here are outraged when they hear of injustice. And I think this community responds to it, not as totally, but always a public response from enough people, so that the sense of the community is, we want to be better.
Mm-hmm.
We are better.
I do. And I think that what's been so amazing for me to see is that when people are, you know, I've lived down in Alameda for 19 years, and so I'm still a newbie.
You weren't born at Alameda Hospital, so you're not an Alamedan.
I'm not an Alamedan, and I'm still new after 19 years. But I do think, because of all of the, you know, we're going to have a lot of development on this island, and there will be a lot more people who kind of come into the city.
You're driving down Buena Vista.
Yeah.
It's like incredible. I mean, it's block after block after block of housing.
Yeah.
I don't know. And they, so apparently the demographer thinks that they will never have children.
Yeah.
Yes. Somebody told me that this was the same demographer that they used on Bay Farm. In which case, they should check their references.
I have to check that. I don't know if
that is... Because they were so far... But, you know, like even Payden was built... And that's how things can get better. Payden was built on the periphery, so that their neighborhood was circumscribed, because they had the bay at the back, so that they had to draw children in a circle.
Yeah.
So that they had a limited... Their enrollment was... low income, basically, because of the neighborhood, no infusion from anywhere else. And it was just was chugging along, nobody bothering anybody. And then along came a principal who had a good idea about a way to structure K-5 education, and she put it into practice, and they were banging down the doors from all over town to get into this program. So they were dealing with the diversity and with the provinciality of wanting to be in your own bailiwick.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, and then I don't know whether that school has probably changed a lot over the years. My kids went there.
Payton.
But we learned, you know, and we moved forward. And the principal from that school spread the idea, and spread the same thing with junior jets. It used to be that the West End was the pariah, but there are people wanting to get into junior jets from Bay Farm Island to come to junior jets. And because the district has made an effort or whatever, it snuck up on the district. They didn't try. Mm-hmm. But because of what they were offering, people were responding.
Responded to it, yeah. So 60 years in Alameda, very involved in Democrats, in the kind of Democratic Party, in civic engagement, fair housing, education. You've learned many lessons along the way. You've seen some really wonderful things. You've seen some things that have not been so wonderful, I'm sure. What do you think we need to make sure to... What are the lessons learned for us?
What are the lessons?
Lessons learned, like the things that you've seen that you don't want
trying.
Us to
just
keep on trying.
Just keep on trying, and eventually you will be heard. If you do it nicely. Or strongly.
Strongly. Nicely and strongly, I would say. There's a way to do that, right?
No, I think if you look at Alameda now and you look at Alameda 15 years ago, it's so different. It's, you know, I mean, even you can pick out a restaurant, 10 different, you know, restaurants in one night. It's just different, and it never would have been acceptable. And yet it's acceptable now, and it's growing now. And every day there's some new restaurant with some other kind of ethnicity there.
Yeah.
It's like
it's thriving. It's
you
really
can't
great.
Go in and find a meatloaf sandwich anywhere anymore.
I think you can at Jim's. You can get a meatloaf sandwich at Jim's.
That's right.
I think still. All right, and let me see. These are some really good questions.
This has been interesting.
Oh, here's a good one. We'll end with this question of you. What are you proudest of? And, why does it make you feel proud?
What makes me proud is that I've been on the right side of every social issue in this community. And that makes me proud. And I think people see me that way. And that's the way I want to be seen. And I am proud to be seen that way.
Huh. Good for you. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
All right, Barbara, I'm going to turn this off now. We have Barbara Kahn.
You want me to say my name?
Yeah, say it one
Barbara
more time.
Barbara Kahn.
Barbara Kahn. Born, where were you born?
For peace and justice and kindness and understanding and working together towards a better world.
Signing off for now.
This has been fun.
Yay, it was fun.
Now this is going to be a